This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it's been 2 weeks since you've had a live show. This one's not live either, though. I literally just got back from 2 weeks in Mexico. My first week spent at the Swing Set Takes Desire event in Cancun, Mexico. And then my second week spent at Isla Mujeres, which is an amazing island across from Cancun. I'm going to be catching everyone up on my social media, mostly on Instagram. So if you don't follow me, you should, at Tristan Taramino. You can read all about my adventures. While I was there, I basically unplugged. I didn't post on social media. I didn't check my email. I didn't check texts for 2 weeks, which is the longest I've ever gone. It was quite liberating. But of course, I want to catch you all up, so I will. And speaking of catching up, for those of you who are following my personal health saga, I'm super excited to report that today, which is November 22nd when you're listening, I am having my ablation, which is a back procedure, you can Google it, which hopefully is going to help my chronic pain. And so if you've followed my social media and you know there's been like appeals to the insurance company and so much hassle and so much bureaucracy, and then by the time you hear this, I will have already had it, which I'm very excited about. And thanks for all your well wishes. So I also want to hear what you guys are thinking about towards the end of this year. What has 2019 been like for you? Can you describe it in words? Do you have a wish for how 2020 might go? Tell me, call me. The number is 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX, that's sex, 8266. I'm really excited about my guest today because we met at Sex Down South, and it was just one of those things where I went to his talk and I was like, I love you. I want to be your friend. And this talk is amazing. I should have him on my show. Let me tell you about him. Raheem Thower is a clinical social worker and psychotherapist based in Toronto. He works on a health team and as a consultant in private practice. He operates from a harm reduction, sex positive, anti-oppressive, and trauma-informed approach, providing psychotherapy to newcomer, racialized, queer, trans, and HIV-affected communities. He also facilitates trainings for organizations around anti-racism, anti-oppression, queer men's mental health, and becoming more trauma-informed. He's obviously singing my tune. Raheem provides clinical supervision to graduate students and frontline workers and teaches as a lecturer at post-secondary institutions. He developed curriculum for a number of courses in Centennial College's Addiction and Mental Health Worker Program before its launch in the fall of 2016. Raheem is co-editor of a local history anthology entitled Any Other Way, How Toronto Got Queer. And he volunteers with Salam Canada, a national LGBTQ Muslim organization, as part of the core organizing team. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Raheem.
Thanks for having me.
That was long and involved, but look at all you've done. Okay, so I met you at Sex Down South back in September. You were one of the what's called a sex celeb, which is like the featured. It's like the featured speakers, and you. It's like a bunch of different people, and they all give keynotes on different days. Right. And I went to your keynote, and I, as I said in the opening, I fell in love with your keynote and with you. And then I got to see you at some slightly divey lesbian bar where. where we talked briefly. And now we haven't talked since then. So I'm like really excited to catch up.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be on this show. And I love hearing that you fell in love with me. That just makes all my dreams come true.
Oh, that's sweet. So your presentation was about fluidity. Fluidity and fluid was like the theme this year of Sex Down South. And I wondered if you might talk about some of the major ideas in that presentation. You talked about body fluids, gender fluidity. There's another kind of fluidity. Anyway, give me like a little bit, some of the pieces of that.
Absolutely. So when I heard that the conference was about fluid and the organizers asked me what I might want to talk about, my head was really spinning. And I really had to think about what fluid means in the context of sex. And once I thought about bodily fluids, I thought, ooh, in my body, I can feel all kinds of reactions to bodily fluids. In some contexts, great. In other contexts, yuck. And then I thought, where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluids? And why do the scripts change from, you know, from when we're on public transit to when we're in the bedroom? And it also made me think about both gender fluidity and interpersonal fluidity. So how we can kind of be or show up in the world in a way that is on a spectrum or on a or in a continuum, and what allows for that fluidity. What are the contexts that make it okay, and what are the contexts that make it not so okay? And so the crux of my argument was that the medical community has had a huge influence on how we think about bodily fluids. They teach us to contain them. And we do that because in a medical setting, you're afraid of infection or contamination. So if we take that idea and extrapolate it, what does the idea of contamination look like when we think about negative responses to gender fluidity or negative responses to interpersonal fluidity? And then toward the end of my presentation, I thought a little bit about what would be different in relationship to myself and to other people if I could allow for more fluid and fluidity in my life.
Mm. That's such a great question. And you broke it down in such interesting ways. I mean, you're in your talk about gender, I remember you talking about this idea of like, what it means for people to want to contain gender fluidity, right? Essentially put people in the two boxes and then keep them there, right? And sort of gatekeep them. And when people begin to stray from those boxes, make up their own categories, develop new language, have different gender identities, have different gender expressions, there's this constant pull to sort of like not let it get so fluid, not let it get so out of control, kind of.
Yeah, totally. And so the examples I had given were from common sitcoms that I thought people might be able to relate to. And so one of them was Saved by the Bell, and thinking about how Zach and Slater, these two guys who are not, they're not the same by any means. They have different attributes. The audience likes them for different reasons, but they represent two different versions of the American boy. But if you have somebody that is kind of smart, likes techie things, we create this category of the geek. And so Screech was always the butt of a joke. You know, he was always the nerd, the geek. But not just that, not because of just of his interest. He's always somebody who messes up. He can't get anything right. He's good at only one thing. He can't be in a relationship. And so I think we construct masculinity in a particular way that's so rigid that even if we understand somebody else to be a man, but they don't fit into it, we create like an accommodation where we're like, oh, this is a different kind of man. And you don't want to be like this person because he exists just for comedic relief, right? And we see that with Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, where, you know, Carlton was respected in many ways, but he was the butt end of the joke. And we all knew that Will Smith was the funny protagonist. He's the person who could date women, and women really liked him. And there was things that he did in terms of going against his parents or his aunt and uncle that we see as typical of adolescent masculinity, right? And Carlton is funny because he doesn't do those things. Right, so we have very particular ideas about gender, and I think the last example I also gave was from Family Matters. If you think about Steve Urkel became Stefan Urkel, I think, when he went into his, I think he had like a time machine or a gas chamber or something that basically converted him into a cooler version of himself. And to think about how somebody might simply shift how they move their body, how they take up space, how they change their attire, essentially how they do gender differently makes us gravitate toward them as opposed to away from them, right? Steve Urkel's, the love of his life, was very much into Stefan, but not him. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me think about the messages we learn at a young age about the type of man you're supposed to be. Now, I have to say, I exist in a world as a queer man, in gay men's communities primarily, and so a lot of my examples come from thinking about masculinity.
Well, and the other thing that strikes me, these are such good examples, is that Screech and Urkel, they're basically failing at masculinity, or at least some elements of masculinity. But that failure also leads them to be less desirable.
Totally.
Right.
Totally.
The folks, because the main protagonists who are doing masculinity, quote unquote, right, are also desired because of it.
They're so desired. And I think, you know, because in our culture, we don't allow for gender fluidity as a baseline. We don't expect it as a part of your development. People get ideas from a very young age about potentially failing gender. And when you feel like you fail gender, I think you have to overcompensate. And I think that's where toxic masculinity comes from.
Yes. And also where people feel like have an internalized sense of, I'm not doing this right. I'm not the right kind of man. I'm not the right kind of dude. And therefore, men or women don't want me. It's sort of directly connected, right, to your own sense of self and desirability, I think.
Totally. It also makes me think about how we learn from a young age that we have to curate who we are to the outside world. And we have to think about monitoring ourselves, surveilling ourselves to put our best self forward, you know? And I think that's a really difficult thing, you know, when I think about being a young person going to like school dances, you know, what does it mean to be a boy or a girl going into a school dance and thinking about the scripts you have to follow in order to be accepted, right? And so in many ways, rigidity, it doesn't bring out fear in other people. Rigidity around gender elicits a lot of celebration of our bodies, mm-hmm. of our being, right? I think in many ways, the opposite of fear in this context could be celebration.
Yes, because once we have rigidity, people actually feel maybe some sense of safety or comfort, not necessarily consciously, but, and then when the rigidity breaks down, I think people begin to feel like, oh my God, what, you know, and immediately when other people express their gender in a different way, if you're wrestling with your own gender issues, you're likely to be super freaked out when you see people doing gender in, you know, complex or nuanced ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's really interesting. You know, as a queer person, I think about growing up and being around other guys who might appear feminine and be made fun of for it, or at least it's pointed out. I would want to then become more masculine presenting, as though I could actually do that, which I couldn't, but I would want to pretend so that I couldn't be called out or named like that person, right? Even though that person actually ends up being an option, it's like a cultural representation of who I can be, except I don't get a message that I can be that and it's okay. I just get a message that that can exist. So I feel slightly
you could
less
be lonely. Ostracized for it.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Okay, we got to take our first commercial break. How did that happen? I don't know, people. Time, it passes. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about fluidity. We're going to talk about fear and shame and their impact on our sexuality. So don't go anywhere. Hey everyone, Tristan here. The Pleasure Chest continues falling in lust in November. This month, their Pleasure Ed program of free sex ed classes features threesomes with Tina Horn, Midori's Dirty Fun Rope Tricks, Advanced Double Penetration, 50 Things to Do with Your Hands, and Edging 101 Erotic Sexual Denial. And forget Black Friday, but do not miss the Pleasure Chest's sexiest sale of the year, which starts Wednesday, November 27th, and runs through Cyber Monday, December 2nd. There'll be 20% off site-wide, plus all Fun Factory products will be 25% off during that time. And that's not all. Enjoy free shipping on all purchases on Cyber Monday, December 2nd. Go to pleasurechest.com to see all the events, take advantage of these super savings, and get your holiday shopping done early. Use promo code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with any purchase. That's a great thing to give for Secret Santa or that last-minute holiday hostess gift. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me and my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking to clinical social worker, psychotherapist, public intellectual, Raheem Thower. And we were talking about your presentation at Sex Down South about fluidity. Now, your third component was about interpersonal fluidity. This was harder for me. This was a bigger concept. So I wonder if you will break it down by what you mean by interpersonal fluidity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about how many of us are slightly different people, or we show different parts of ourselves in different contexts, right? And I think about when that's healthy, supportive, and allows us to flourish, and other times when it holds us back. So when I'm talking about interpersonal fluidity, I'm thinking about choosing who you want to be, choosing how you want to engage with whomever you're with, and deciding for yourself when you want to share different sides of yourself. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I relate to this in a sort of a different way than maybe the average person, which is that there's sort of this Tristan Taramino person who is a public figure and who people like want to meet and talk to. And then there's just me, Tristan. And there is a little bit of, like, there's fluidity in there, and depending on like who's in the room, sort of how much I might reveal or how much I might be vulnerable versus how much I might not be, depending on who I'm interacting with.
Right. So do you mind if I build on that a little bit?
No, build.
Okay. So if you said to me, you know, I always want to be my professional self, because if I'm just me, or I switch from professional me to ordinary me, I worry that people will think I'm not that cool, for example. I would say, maybe in this context, there is fear of fluidity, which is actually fear of yourself, right? And so you're thinking about contamination as parts of your public and private life fusing in a way that works against you. So you might then resort to a kind of rigidity where you feel it's very compulsory that you need to be the professional person all of the time in every context. Does that make sense?
That totally resonates. I didn't know we were going to do therapy, but I'll Venmo you after. That totally makes sense. Because I think also I feel like people have expectations of me, that could be of my own creation as well, but it's like, no one expects me to show up to an event where I'm a guest and be, cranky or, in a bad mood or not really feeling like talking to anyone. Right. I feel like I could be among friends and do that and just be like, guys, I'm having a bad day. I showed up to your party and your dinner, but like, I don't want to talk to anyone. And my friends would just be like, cool. But if I'm booked somewhere, I feel like part of what's expected of me is a certain level of social engagement.
Totally. And I would argue that as much, like, as great as that can be, if you feel like you're being someone that's not authentically yourself and it feels compulsory, that's actually rigidity, not fluidity.
Right.
And, you know, I'm thinking about, so I'll give you an example that shows up in relationships all the time. So for folks who've read Esther Perel's Mating in Captivity, Unlocking Erotic Intelligence, she talks about sex in the context of long-term relationships. And she says, one of the many things she says is, don't tell me what you can do to me, rather tell me where you can take me. And it makes me think about how people can access themselves in sexual context. Why do people in long-term relationships shut down? I think it's because it requires a kind of fluidity where you have to take the part of yourself that operates in the world who can flirt with a casual partner and bring that same exciting self into your relationship. And I think we fear ourselves, or we fear the other, our partners. We fear the consequences, right? So fearing those responses is like experiencing contamination. I've mixed this long-term stable thing with that other fun, flirting, energized being, right? And you know, I think we see this in, so there's a lot of fear of self that comes up, I think, in the context of relationships. But, you know, if you think about communities you've grown up in, I think lots of us have been told at a time in our life, or have been cautioned, to date within our own community, date within our own cultural group or religious group. And I think we do that because in that context, the fear of fluidity is actually a fear of contamination from the other. We worry that we're going to lose something if we let somebody else that is different than us in. And so I think that's really complicated, right? Because we're talking about two people getting to know each other, adjusting, adapting, going along with the fluidity in a way that enhances their personal growth. But then not doing that for fear of contamination, I'm going to lose something if I allow somebody else in. And I think actually in America right now, this crusade to build a wall, you know, on a large political scale, is about fear of the other. It's about fear of contamination. It's about fear of these other people are going to come in and be a threat to or destroy our values. And that's on a big political scale, but I think it happens in relationships, intercultural, interfaith relationships. And I think that fear of contamination shows up even in long-term relationships when it's the fear of self. How can I be multiple things in the context of this relationship? And will I ruin things? Well, will I contaminate things if different parts of me come together? Will America be ruined if, you know, white people and immigrants get along together, even though white people are immigrants, but they don't necessarily know that.
Right. No, this wall, this whole building of the wall between the United States and Mexico, which, by the way, the border is a false border. It's socially constructed. It's years of colonialism. So we think there's like a wall there. It is quite a metaphor, though, right?
It really is.
Metaphor about containment, about making something sort of solid between us, mm-hmm. right? Not allowing a kind of a traffic, a flow. And I think that does get reflected in relationships. And it's also being sort of encouraged on, I don't know, it's being encouraged on a national level. And I feel like folks who feel more fluid in their gender identity, in their sexual orientation, in their desire, do feel a sense of stigma about that, because there's this sense right now that we've got to play by the rules, and the rules have been set by basically a white supremacist culture and government.
Yeah, absolutely. And I go back to this idea of medical approaches to bodily fluids, and my friend Julie Devaney, who wrote this book called My Leaky Body, great book. She talks about her own journey as a patient of colitis. And, you know, when you have so many digestive issues and you can't control them, the medical community wants to patch you up, contain you, sterilize. There's all kinds of things about obsessive cleanliness and safety, universal precautions. And when you take those ideas and you think about what that means for interpersonal relationships, that means segregation. When you think about what that means on a political scale, that means, like racism, misogyny, ableism, homophobia. And when you think about what that means for a person, a dynamic, complicated person living, you know, wherever they live, that means a fragmented self where I can't connect with my desire. I can't connect with myself. I'm not allowed to be multiple things. There's lots of fear around any kind of expression, whether it's gender, sexual, or interpersonal.
Yeah, it also makes me think, I'm going to hold that thought.
Okay.
Because it's like a whole new thought, but it's based on this. It makes me think of. Let's take a commercial break, hear from our great sponsors. I want to welcome my brand new sponsor, Lust Cinema. You're going to hear all about it in just a minute, but I want to say hi to them. And I also want to tell you what's going on at the Pleasure Chest. You know, they have these amazing free Pleasure Ed events at their stores. The ones that are coming up in New York City, December 4th, Blowjobs and Beyond. In Chicago, December 4th, The Squirt Shop. And in Los Angeles, December 8th, Intimate Partner Yoga. You can go to pleasurechest.com to find out about those events, specials that they're having, great sex ed and information. All of it's there, pleasurechest.com. Stay with us, more with Raheem when we return. Hey everyone, it's Tristan, and it's time to listen up because we're going to talk about one of my very favorite subjects, porn. We all know that it's not hard to find porn on the internet, but finding porn that you like, that's a different story. Sometimes you can spend more time looking for a scene that you like than you actually spend watching it. And it can feel like a never-ending black hole of cliches, bad scripts, and plastic leather sofas. If you want to try something new with relatable storylines, realistic situations of very hot sex, and cinematic quality, then you need to check out the new LustCinema.com. Founded by Erica Lust, Lust Cinema is her new U.S. porn studio for lovers of cinema and sex. On Lust Cinema, you'll find original series and feature films shot by Erica herself and other U.S.-based female directors, as well as a huge catalog of content from other adult filmmakers. If you already know Erica Lust, then you know that she makes beautiful cinematic porn on X Confessions. So expect nothing less on her new Lust Cinema. You'll experience the whole feeling of sex, the passion and the pleasure. And on Lust Cinema, everyone's pleasure is equally important. Hear, hear to that. Erica wants Sex Out Loud listeners to experience her world of lust, so she's giving you a one-month membership for just $5. Visit www.lustcinema.com/Tristan to get your $5 month and start streaming now. That's lustcinema.com/Tristan. Lust Cinema. Great porn, better sex.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Raheem Thower. And Raheem is the co-editor of an anthology called Any Other Way, How Toronto Got Queer. He's a psychotherapist. He's a consultant. He gave this awesome presentation, which we've been talking about at Sex Down South, where I met him. So Raheem, this made me think of a post that I saw on my social media feed just, I think, yesterday. This is from Dr. Chris Donahue, who is a sex therapist who's been on the show before. This is what he says. Our society's ongoing and longstanding devaluing and denial of merger needs has led to problematic, quote, relationships with drugs, in parentheses, I don't use the term addiction, and mental health struggles like depression, anxiety, and loneliness, because individualism and independence are encouraged at the expense of relational attachment needs. Follow your instincts and your body's desire for merger and not the cultural norm of separation. We turn to technology, work, substances, and other non-human sources when we can't connect to other people. Mental health is relational health. What do you think about that?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the way I'm understanding it is that there's so much fear around connection or fear of oneself. Right?
Or this losing of self, which you said, the losing of self if you are intimate with someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and then the way he talks about it is that we then medicate that fear or we avoid it, right? Mm-hmm. So signs of fear can be like discomfort, avoidance, urgency, invisibility, secrecy, disgust, adhering to norms. We do all kinds of things to manage fear, right? And so, you know, an urgent response can be to use drugs or alcohol, right? Also, you know, urgency in another way is after somebody ejaculates, they have to clean it all up right away. There's an urgency to that because the fear then surfaces. These two examples are just so different, but it's how fear drives a lot of how, or hinders, you know, or plays a role in how we connect with ourselves and other people. So I do find that fascinating.
Yeah, so you had this example in your presentation about how the bodily fluids section where you're like, you know, how many of you have had a situation where someone comes, they sort of make a mess and you immediately sort of jump up and like get the paper towel or the trick towel or get in the shower or whatever it is. And of course, so many people in the audience related to that. And it's like, why do we get sort of so freaked out, right? Like, why can't we just sort of lay there with someone's cum on us or our own?
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think as a society at large, and this isn't restricted to any particular culture group, I think as a society at large, we are sexually repressed. We're taught sex in general is bad. Exploring sexuality is not seen as a life task. Like, no one says set aside time during your day to do this thing, mm-hmm. right? It's all very secret, closed door. And I think when we're sexually excited, part of our brain gets suspended, or some part of our brain get, like, some part of our daily thinking gets suspended. And then as soon as we come, you know, that part is not suspended anymore, and we're thinking about logistical things like, I need to mop, I need to do this, I need to do that. And people will know this if they are with a partner and they come first, and then suddenly they're thinking about, I don't know, doing the dishes or what, you know. It mm-hmm. could be that their partner's taking an outrageously long time, but it could also mean that their body doesn't know how to stay present in the moment because they have fear of fluidity, or they have some underlying experience of disgust or disconnection from sex and their bodies.
Raheem, this makes me think of a personal story that recently happened to me, which is,
tell me everything.
I was having a threesome with a couple, cis man, cis woman, and I was giving the guy a blowjob, and he had a really big dick, and I choked on it a bit, and I threw up. Now, first of all, throwing up for me is like kind of a hard limit. I like the idea of like gagging, but I do not want to throw up, you know. And so I sort of like took my head up and then just sort of like moved it to the edge of the bed and just like threw up. And then I was like, okay, like I've never had sex with these people before. I know them, but not that well. Like, what do we do now? Right. And his wife, they're married. His wife went, just got up from the bed, went and got this like Clorox wipe and just like wiped up the floor and then like put it in the garbage. And she said to me, hey, do you like want like a Starburst or something? Because, of course, like my mouth probably smelled like vomit, right? And I was so taken by the whole experience, like how, you know, shameless it was, how totally unexpected it was for something like this, which I think freaks a lot of people out and even freaked me out at the time, right? And they were both just like, okay, like, how do you feel? And I'm like, I feel fine. And they're like, okay, great, let's keep going.
Great. But they sound like goal-oriented people.
No, they it's just that they didn't have the sort of fear and anxiety. It's like they didn't freak out, right? And that was so lovely because I feel like the average person and what I was anticipating was a kind of freak out, which most people do because we have these like strict rules about which bodily fluids we're allowed to sort of expel and which we're not.
Right.
Oh. Anyway, yeah, I mean, just thinking back to that.
Poop and vomit are routinely, seen as less desirable. But
yeah.
I think people, even when people don't desire them or eroticize them, I think they see them as kind of normal human fluids. And they're like, oh, yeah, your body did a thing. No big deal. It made me think about, a little rendezvous I had back in April. I slept over at some stranger's home, not that much of a stranger, but slept over at his home, and we had like a lovely night together. And the next morning we were talking to each other, and I was like, I'm gonna go brush my teeth before we keep talking. And he's like, no, your breath is fine. I'm like, it is not fine. And he said, you don't need to worry about that. He's like, our bodies are gonna do what they do, and that's fine. That's just what they need to do. And I thought, wow, I do still like to brush my teeth in the morning before I talk to somebody, but that felt really great. Like that, you know, I could not worry about that for a minute and just be with a person. You know, we're just socialized to have so much anxiety about our bodies,
and
it's
how unfortunate. They work. Yeah. And so when someone models that, when someone models that for you, it's like the first reaction is surprise. Right? 100%. And then it's sort of like relief.
Yes.
So you talked about our sex negative society and how we are not encouraged to sort of set time aside to have sex, to explore sex, to learn about sex, which is absolutely true. And as a sex educator, I'm sort of fighting against that all the time. And so I know that you teach this workshop called Beyond Eggplants and Peaches for gay male communities or men who have sex with men. And so I was looking around, I was snooping around at it, and it occurred to me, you know, there don't seem to be a lot of sex ed classes that are geared for men who have sex with men specifically. I feel like the majority of classes are obviously geared toward straight people, and then there might be queer people, but they tend to be taught by and for queer women or non-binary folks. Do you agree with that, that there are less sort of sex ed for men who sleep with men?
That's certainly been my experience. I think where I'm based in Toronto, there are a number of things offered, but historically they've been offered through HIV/AIDS organizations. And you don't have to be living with HIV to access any of the programs, because a lot of them are for people who are affected, and that could be all queer and gay men, including trans men. But as the landscape of HIV has changed quite a bit, you know, in the last 30, 35 years, I don't know that gay men in general think about going to an HIV/AIDS service organization as a place to talk about sex, pleasure, relationships, although they might, you know, like there's a group that happens in Toronto for people who are struggling with crystal meth and sex, but that's also, it's a bit problem focused. It's about how do I manage something versus how do I explore this?
Right, like pure pleasure for pleasure's sake. I feel like, when it's put through this lens of sex and drugs or sex and HIV, I feel like that's going to attract a very particular crowd. And you know, you could go over all those issues in a class about sex, obviously. So, So it just occurs to me, like within my own circle, that I just don't see enough classes. And I did, of course, in the 90s when I was coming out and coming up. But you're right. They were all focused around safer sex, HIV, AIDS. And so they had a particular tenor to them, right? Which was like, we're dying here and we need to figure out how to protect ourselves. So I'm interested like about who comes to your classes, what they're all about, but we got to take a commercial break.
Sure.
So let's take the commercial break. And when we come back, we will talk about eggplants and peaches, which by the way, now those emojis are banned if you're using them in a sexual context. So nice job using the words, which haven't been banned, just the symbols. When we come back, more with Raheem Thower. Hey everyone, Tristan here. The Pleasure Chest continues falling in lust in November. This month, their Pleasure Ed program of free sex ed classes features Threesomes with Tina Horn, Midori's Dirty Fun Rope Tricks, Advanced Double Penetration, 50 Things to Do with Your Hands, and Edging 101 Erotic Sexual Denial. And forget Black Friday, but do not miss the Pleasure Chest's sexiest sale of the year, which starts Wednesday, November 27th, and runs through Cyber Monday, December 2nd. There'll be 20% off site-wide, plus all Fun Factory products will be 25% off during that time. And that's not all. Enjoy free shipping on all purchases on Cyber Monday, December 2nd. Go to pleasurechest.com to see all the events, take advantage of these super savings, and get your holiday shopping done early. Use promo code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with any purchase. That's a great thing to give for Secret Santa or that last-minute holiday hostess gift.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with psychotherapist Raheem Thower, who, you know, just like a therapist, you know, draws some stories out of me that I didn't even know I was going to share today. We were talking before the break about this class, Beyond Eggplants and Peaches, which you teach. And one of the things I'm curious about is kind of who shows up for the class, what you talk about in the class, how it's received. Because I know this is something you do in different places. For example, you'll come to a city and do it, or an organization will bring you. So tell me a little bit more about it.
Yeah, totally. So I've been really excited about talking about gay men and relationships for a while. And the reason for that is because I think, as somebody who thinks a lot about mental health, I think queer men's mental health exists in the landscape of relationships. And it's not that that's not true for other people, but I think we have to contend with integrating the messages we get from dominant culture, like straight dominant culture, and then queer subculture around the value of casual sex and the value of long-term relationships, right? And I think these, like, the messages and scripts are a bit conflicting because we want all of the things all of the time. So, for example, you know, somebody might say casual sex is an important part of gay culture, or sex for us is about liberation. And then on the other hand, you know, people are telling you sex has consequences. Think about STIs and HIV, and casual sex means maybe you're not a mature person. So in my classes, what we talk about is what we break down all of the messages we've gotten about casual sex and long-term relationships from dominant culture and subcultures. And then I say to people, you know, you probably would probably, you know, this would be more like a weighing scale to see what you want to pursue, and you would just do that. But that's not what our lives look like. We want it all. And we want it all because there's specific rewards and challenges that come from the pursuit of casual sex and the pursuit of long-term relationships, right? And so then we go through a list of, like, all the challenges that can come up when you're seeking a partner, when you're in a long-term relationship, when you've identified there's a romantic interest, and then the rewards and challenges of casual sex. So maybe shame gets activated, maybe body image issues get activated. And throughout, I draw on video clips of couples having great conversations, and I take those from the Skin Deep. They have a project called The And, and you can look at that at just theand.us. And they've got some great videos of couples having hard conversations. And then we take time to play the card game that's brought to you by the Skin Deep, and we try to take apart what it's like, right? And then we want to talk about, we spend a good portion of time talking about boundaries and, like, the idea of a personal sexual inventory, and what does that mean? What are all of the different things we can ask for or talk about? I find with gay men, you know, our conversation, one of the areas is, like, how do we talk about sexual pain? How do we talk about cleanliness, or being okay with, you know, not douching, things like that. One interesting area that I take the talk into is to talk about attachment and relationship orientation. So attachment theory is a very, like, clinical psychotherapy thing, and it's my goal in this workshop to, like, make it relevant to people and help them think about, through, by using a checklist, what their attachment style is and what does that mean for their relationships. And Tristan, you'll be happy to know, I constantly draw on your material around opening up, and I reference your book, and I ask people to check out your checklist, and to do it with a partner and see what comes up. And then we end with talking about approaches to managing rejection and what that means. So this class that I give is 5 full hours long. It's very long. Usually do it at, like, a restaurant or a bar. People order drinks and food. Sometimes the host organization will pay for some appetizers. But overall, we have a good time, and we get to the bottom of some really important things for queer guys.
Well, I think it's really interesting. Attachment theory is obviously talked about a lot in therapy circles. Yeah. And I'm wondering what you think the cultural implications of attachment theory are, because you are gay and Muslim, yes, which we didn't even get to talk about because we're running out of time.
Yes.
But, you know, it occurs to me that this theory was written by white people, taught by white people, conceptualized by white people. How do you use it in a way that doesn't sort of reinforce standards of white supremacy?
Totally. Well, so people have brought this up in my workshop, right, where they say, you know, you're telling me to be more independent, or attachment theory wants me to not rely on people, but my culture is interdependent. And I would say, no, I don't think we need to not be interdependent. I think we need to manage our fear around loss of self or loss of other. And we have to think about how avoidance or anxiety plays out in our relationships, right? So in our dominant culture right now, I think, you know, if somebody relies a lot on themselves, is very logical, really feels independent, they can be celebrated. But actually, there's a chance that their attachment style is actually quite avoidant, mm-hmm. right? And so I think it's relevant for everyone to just take a look at what their style might be. And then, of course, think about it in a cultural context. And, you know, as somebody who's Muslim and South Asian, in my experience, you know, I would not defend my community or my culture to say, oh, you know, we're just as a function of our culture, as a function of who we are, we're all enmeshed. No, I think it, you know, to some degree, we rely on each other more than other communities might. But individuation and finding a sense of self outside somebody, outside our families and communities is important. Otherwise, we will be anxious in our relationships. So I think it's relevant.
Yeah. Okay. Because it came up, I think, one of the shows I recently did, and I went to a workshop on attachment theory, and I was just wondering, like, where is the sort of social justice analysis of attachment theory? So you think it's still relevant and can be applied, and it's not Yes. sort of steeped in whiteness?
Well, here's the thing. So many things are steeped in whiteness, but I'm living in a time where I am learning and practicing and bouncing things off of other clinicians who have similar politics as me, right? So any therapy or any theory can be applied poorly, right? But I think at a baseline, to take all the knowledge that's ever been kind of documented, created, and written about and say, well, this is just created by white people, and so therefore it is, racist, it's a bit of a lazy argument, because I would say, yes, that's a component of it, but what does it look like when we adapt it? So we point out what the theorists did wrong, and then we think about what can we take from it and what's relevant, right? I don't think we can critique something without learning a little bit about it first, and I think mm-hmm. sometimes we do that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Raheem. This has been so fun.
This is great. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh. I want to tell people how to get you. Your website is Affective Consult. So I just want to spell that because people fuck this word up all the time.
Yeah.
So AFFECTIVE consult.ca. Because yes. Canada.
Yes.
On Twitter, you are Raheem Thawer, which is RAHIMTHAWER. On Facebook, you are facebook.com/affectivetoronto. And on Instagram, one of the best handles, probably in the history of all Instagram handles, you are Lady Atavan. Oh my God. That's an amazing name for a drag queen, for a band, for a book, for so many things. Just so many things. I can't believe you snapped
even.
That up.
Well, thank you for that compliment.
Yes, check out Raheem on all the interwebs and all the social media. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. We're going to do an encore presentation of my interview with Yin Q, who is the creator of the BDSM web series Mercy Mistress. Check that out. And in the meantime, you can follow me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.